Hello, I'm Lina Ahmadu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will look at some efforts to improve healthcare access in Africa with an emphasis in Sierra Leone. We spoke with Linda Muxon-Sese. She's a founder of the NGO Community Health Foundation. But first, the World Meteorological Organization reports that intense heat has impacted large parts of the Northern Hemisphere this summer, causing major damage to people's health and the environment. 2023 is on track to becoming one of the hottest years on record. Reports show an increase of health-related death globally as temperatures soar above 40 degrees Celsius in many regions. Africa is experiencing some of the highest temperatures in its equatorial regions. Data from the Wise Voter Institute reveals the 10 hottest African countries in 2023, which include Mali, Senegal, Burkina Faso, Niger, and Mauritania. Now to Cameroon, where the separatist conflict in its sixth year has left thousands of people dead, while an estimated 2 million survivors struggle with emotional wounds. In Bafoussam, the capital of Cameroon's West Region, a trauma healing center is overwhelmed with requests for help. Anne Nzwanke has the story narrated by Moki Edwin Kinzeka.
Every other week, Aminatu Musa goes to a speech therapy session organized by the Mission 21 Trauma Healing and Resilience Center. She's in her third session and still can't talk without crying. In 2018, Musa and her husband fled the conflict between government forces and separatist militant groups in Western Cameroon, heading for Nigeria. But along the way, she says her husband fell ill and died. Musa says that for nearly a year, she has not been able to sleep.
Most of the times when I come to center like this, when I come to the meeting like this and go back, I'll sleep a bit. After a while, the sleep will just disappear.
The healing process begins with therapy in groups of up to 20 people. After that, therapists hold individual sessions with patients. Mission 21, a Swiss non-governmental organization, also organizes home visits. The center offers material assistance, but therapist Esther Mokong says that kind of aid is of limited help.
If you give me a business when I'm hurting, I will not do anything with that business. So when you heal me first and I'm fine and I'm relaxed, I can now be able to do something.
When Vanessa Ngang was 20, the crisis began and her husband was killed by the separatists. She spent 5 years battling illness and unemployment. After 3 months of treatment, she was able to start a new life in a sewing workshop.
So, they were fine.
I feel good. I learned a new skill and graduated. They opened my sewing shop. I thank Mission 21 for this initiative to care for people. From time to time, I still have memories of the past, but I am fine.
But I'm fine. When I go back, I cry. I come back, I'm fine.
Country coordinator Togo Lumumba Mukong says Mission 21 conducts about 120 counseling sessions per month, but demand is 3 times as high. He says the NGO wants to not only add specialists to its office, but also find a suitable solution for each family.
We think that we, as Mission 21, we cannot do anything without others. So we need local NGOs, we need even the willingness of the IDPs to work with us, and then we put our hands together, then we can all come out of this trauma, which is ongoing.
According to the UN, Cameroon's separatist conflict, now in its sixth year, has left thousands of people dead, while an estimated 2 million conflict survivors are seeking help to continue their education or find work. For Anne Zwanke in Bafoussam, Cameroon, Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News.
parents around the world who have children with some form of disability are experiencing healthcare challenges. Among them, Nigerian parents of autistic children seek support and understanding. Here is more.
Kristen Inaji never starts roaring without the late American singer Michael Jackson's voice crooning from the speaker in her studio. With the help of her mother, the 17-year-old mixes paints in the family sitting room turned studio, her art spread over the floors and up the walls as she works on an abstract portrait of a woman. When Inaji turned 3, her parents noticed her continuously stare into space and fail to respond to her own name. They assumed she was hard of hearing, despite negative medical tests. 2 years later, Inaji was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, and her mother, Noni Mike Inaji, is slipped into depression.
In my mind, I was still thinking that maybe there was something that would happen, you know, if we did a particular thing, a particular therapy, even drugs, because I've not actually heard of autism before. I was in denial.
The COVID-19 pandemic was a game changer for the family. While students school from home in early 2021, Inaji struggled to focus on her laptop. In spite of public gathering restrictions, her mother hired an art teacher to join them at the house. The effects were immediate.
Within 3 weeks into painting, Christine started talking. We gained speed, we gained composure, behavioral changes, confidence, self-awareness, and she got self-assurance. And I could now see, oh my goodness, there's actually a light at the end of the tunnel.
A study published in the National Library of Medicine says that one of the main barriers to research and management of autism in sub-Saharan Africa has been the scarcity of validated tools. Temitope Adeleke works as a speech therapist in a special needs school.
My parents will complain that to get a specialist teacher is expensive. It's expensive because the materials that we use to, they are expensive. They are not just cheap things. A lot of us, we even improvise.
For the past 2 years, Christine and her mother have been holding events for children living in slums to help increase understanding and acceptance of people with autism.
In Sierra Leone, the National Drug Law Enforcement Agency says kush, a mix of various chemicals and plants that mimic the natural properties found in cannabis, is increasingly being used by youth in the country. At only 25 U.S. cents a dose, the drug is highly addictive to users. Vincent McCorry has more.
A few puffs only takes to end up in a trance-like state for up to an hour. The drug is called kush, a potent mix of chemicals that mimics cannabis. In this smoke-filled room in a shanty town, young Sierra Leoneans have gathered to get their fix. Many are barely in their teens. At around 25 U.S. cents a dose, it's a cheap and easy way to escape reality. Users can be identified by the extreme drowsiness and swaying movements. In the past few years, kush has wreaked havoc on the lives of young people in Sierra Leone, one of the poorest countries in the world.
They say I have to purge my body of this substance. Since I started smoking 5 years ago, my body is now addicted to this thing. I have to buy medication, but I don't have the ability to wean myself off it. So it's difficult for me.
Ibrahim Koroma is a social worker. He thinks kush is one of the most pressing issues facing the young people he works with. He often visits the hideouts where smokers meet up. On this day, Ibrahim speaks with around 100 addicts about the dangers of kush. There are no official statistics and no studies have been done on this growing problem, so the real number of people affected remains unknown.
Young people are dying. We need a speedy and refocused strategy to see how young people are taking from this drug intake. But at the point is, but at the moment, it is quite alarming.
This hospital building is exclusively for patients going through withdrawal. These young men are locked into dormitories for 3 to 6 weeks. Some will need to be dosed up on antipsychotics. With NGOs offering financial support and staff training, patients are given psychotherapy as well as recreational classes to enjoy, such as sports and sewing. No more kush. These young people have come out the other side, swearing kush is now behind them.
I would like to tell colleagues out there that these substances that we do take, that they do take, because I'm no longer part of them now, because I'm now a changed person.
But in the face of a highly addictive drug, willpower is not always enough for those being discharged, as resources for follow-up support remain low, relapse rates remain high. Vincent McCorry, VOA News.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Nabil Biagio and his what's coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's army chief traveled Tuesday to Egypt on his first trip abroad since the outbreak of conflict in April. And fighting in Darfur's Niala town on Tuesday killed at least 39 civilians when shelling hit their homes. Tune in for these stories and more at 16:30 UTC in Juba and 1700 UTC in Kenya on VOA Africa.
Welcome back to Health Chat. In the wake of the military coup in Niger and the sanctions imposed on the country, the activities of some NGOs have slowed down. This has caused frustration to the communities they help. Our correspondent in Niamey, Abdul Razak Idrissa, met the heads of two organizations working in the fields of gender, peace and security and health. Once again, here is VOA's Vincent McCorry.
Hamza Jibo is the executive director of ESCAVI, which stands for Education, Health and Improvement of the Environment. His organization provides access to health services with a particular focus on malaria sufferers. It also promotes universal health coverage in Niger. Since the coup d'etat, the partners who fund its activities have either suspended or postponed their aid. To adapt to the situation and limit the negative effects of this suspension, many have prioritized their interventions.
ECOWAS has imposed a wide range of sanctions which have negatively impacted the health sector, which in turn have crippled the implementation of our activities in the field, since many of our partners have suspended their disbursements and fundings, while others have reduced or limited their funding.
To adapt to the situation and limit the negative effects of this suspension, many have prioritized their interventions.
If I take the case of malaria and the question of CPS, a seasonal prevention campaign, the fact that we bring medicines for the prevention of malaria to children aged 0 to 5, as we know that we are in the peak period of malaria in Niger, so we are trying to ensure that these activities can continue at community level.
Rabia Jibo Magagi coordinates the Alliance for Peace and Security, an organization working in the fields of gender, peace, security, human rights, and governance. Before the coup d'etat, she was supposed to travel to the Tillaberi region for her work.
We can't go because we can't access money from the banks. So we're waiting to see because we don't even know which authority to turn to. We have new governors who aren't quite settled in, even though we're working with them. There's the regional directorate for the protection of women and children, but now there's no ministry. We don't know who we're going to talk to when we go to Tillaberi. That's where the difficulty lies.
As the situation escalated between Niger's new authorities and the international community, particularly ECOWAS, several international NGOs warned in a joint statement that increased instability and sanctions could exacerbate the humanitarian needs of the most vulnerable, especially women and children. For Abdul Razak Idrissa in Niamey, I'm Vincent McCorry, VOA News.
The World Health Organization says there are wide disparities in the health status of different social groups in all countries, whether low, middle, or high income. The lower an individual's socioeconomic position, the higher the risk of poor health. Health disparities are avoidable differences in the burden of disease, injury, violence, or opportunities for optimal health that socially disadvantaged populations face. I spoke with Linda Moxon-Sisse. She's CEO of the organization Community Health Foundation. She says it was important for her to launch her organization, which aims to reduce the gap in access to quality health care in Sierra Leone because of a personal experience growing up in her country. Take a listen.
Our mission is to improve the health sector in Sierra Leone, considering the challenges in the country. Healthcare, it's almost impossible for low-income people to access quality health care. So that is why we form Community Health Foundation. Our mission is to make sure that everybody have equal right to access quality health care services.
Why did you start? Why did you embark on this journey to make a difference?
The reason why I decided to form Community Health Foundation, because I had my experience as a young girl when I was growing up. I had my aunt who died during labor. Wow. She was in labor for 3 days trying to give birth, but she couldn't. The baby was in transverse position in her abdomen, meaning the baby crossed. So the hand and the foot was out and all the other rest parts of the body was inside my aunt's abdomen. They tried to for her to give natural birth. There was no health facility close by in the village. There is no trained midwife except the eligible people who have given birth. They consider them as a midwife due to their childbearing experience. So they were the one trying to let my aunt give birth. Unfortunately, she died. She bled to death. Wow. They were not able to get the baby out. She was buried with the baby.
That's horrible.
Yes. Because of that, I said to myself, when I grow up, I want to make sure that I do something to prevent this kind of tragedy to happen to my people. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got the passion to help maternal and child health. So when I came to U.S., I decided to open a nonprofit called Community Health Foundation, also in Sierra Leone as a nonprofit. Since then, I started asking for donations of medical equipment and supplies, shipped them to the country, also as a donation, until we established our own facility a year ago.
You talk about your aunt. That's really a tragic experience for a young girl to see. So then when you grew up, you decided to embark in the health field. Now you are a nurse. When you became a nurse, what was the driving force behind your work? Was it thinking about your aunt, or was it the fact that you've always been passionate about the medical field?
I'm passionate about the medical field, but the main reason why I decided to go into the medical field was the tragedy that happened with my aunt. Yes. And also looking at the community where I came from, it's almost impossible to access healthcare, not to talk of quality healthcare. Yes. It's from the rural area. I was born and raised in a village in the northern province of Sierra Leone called Tonkolele District. That is far away from the city. So I saw the need, desperate need for healthcare. So being that my aunt is already died, there are other people existing there. So I want to make sure that they grow healthy, birth to their baby healthy. That's why I decided to go into the medical field so I can help my people.
So you decided to start a foundation. How did it all start?
That's interesting. Yes, I started back in 2019. I started first by buying medical equipment, medical supplies. I go on Facebook Market. I buy the used ones, drive like 3 hours away for somebody who just posts. People who have been using medical equipment, sometimes they don't need them anymore. They will post them on the social media like Facebook Market. And I will drive like maybe 3 hours just to get to that person to buy that equipment or consumable. Yeah. So I used to go on Facebook Market, Amazon, buy them and send them, until one day I met a friend who told me that, buying all those things and send them to Africa, it's really tough. Why don't you open like a nonprofit wherein you can get them as a donation for free? So she gave me that idea. Then I decided to open the nonprofit And since then, I started getting donated items, even though I still do buy some of them, the expensive ones. But the other ones, I get them as donation and send them to Sierra Leone.
And who are some of your donors? Is it anybody you know, or you target some specific donors?
I'm open to anyone, but like the main one that I have right now, they call them Brothers Brothers Foundation. It's an organization here in U.S. who give medical stuff to organizations. And I also have another one called AmeriCare. They give us like medication for our medical outreach, because when I go to Sierra Leone, most times we go do medical outreach in the villages. We give out free medication to people, even for eye clinic. We have eye clinic because I have understand that most people go blind very easily. For a simple cataract that is removable. But because they don't have that opportunity, they go blind. So that is one thing I'm also doing right now with my team. I partner with the Ministry of Health. They give us ophthalmologists, meaning eye doctors. So we go to villages and do eye surgery for people.
Which community are you servicing full-time?
Okay, so the hospital is located at Mile 91. That is the name of the town where it's located. Mile 91, Tonkolili District in the northern province of Sierra Leone. However, even though our focus is on maternal and child health, but due to lack of medical access, we still have to provide services to all the community, all the people, I mean men, all ages. That's why we decided to get doctors who are doing different kind of surgeries.
Okay.
Even though we are focused on maternal and child health, but we still have to do surgeries for men, like hernia surgeries, different kind of surgeries for women. I mean, fibroids, cysts, even bone surgery. We have an orthopedic there who is now doing bone surgery, because the highway where the hospital is located is like a highway from the city, from the Freetown, which is the main city, and the second city, which is Bo. So like a highway, there's a lot of accidents in that area. Like most of our patients now, every week we get accident cases. And those people used to bleed to death. Sometimes, even when it's just minor injury, but because they are not able to get to a health facility, they will bleed to death. But because of now, we are there in that location. So all of those people that fall into an accident, they bring them to our facility, and we are able to manage them.
We talked about the fact that you are making a difference on the ground in Sierra Leone, but you are also active here in the United States. Talk to us about this part of your work.
All right. Thank you for that. So, yeah, for here in the U.S., we partner with the Food Bank and other relief NGOs. We do get food items and give them to low-income families. Like we have our location, two locations basically. One is in Lanham, that is we partner with the church that they call them a Redeemer's Church of Christ. They give us the storage and the opportunity for people to come there and get food. And the other one is Jamilu Jolly. That's a mosque, because we want to target the area where people are frequently coming to.
Yes.
So we give food to the community, people. Low-income people, basically. So that is one of our activities here in the U.S., and it's still ongoing. Before now, we started during COVID. We partnered with the state. We were getting PPEs. When PPEs were highly in demand, personal protective equipment, we go to nursing homes, hospitals. We give it for free. That's what we've been doing before. But now, since the COVID is no longer here, so that program is already stopped. But we still continue with our food drive.
What source of impact do you see here in the U.S.?
It's really a positive impact, because it makes me feel good when I see people who really need food. They come and get it. And the smile on their face, you know, you can really tell that it's positively impacting them, you know, because the kind of food we are given, they are healthy food from the Capitaire Food Bank. You know, they are good food. For example, sometimes we give whatever is available, but most times we give like produce, like salad, you know, all those healthy food, chicken, eggs, I mean, rice, beans, different kind of food. And we also try to, we work with the food bank, because most of the beneficiaries for this food program are Africans. So with Africans, you know, they like our African food. So we work with the food bank. Sometimes they give us even cassava, plantain. So they try to give us even African food,
wow,
just so we can meet the needs for
That's
the people.
That's amazing.
Yes.
So then when people need your services, how do they reach you here? Can they just call you or do they wait when you to the community?
Oh, they can always call. My call number is 240-353-1699. So that's the number they call when they want to get food. Sometimes they come in to get food, but our food drive is every other Saturday. But they can walk in to get food as well.
Okay.
Yes, like Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
I know you can't do this alone, so tell us about your team.
My team has been great. You know, I cannot do this without my team. Whatever I'm doing right now is because I have a good team behind me, especially in Sierra Leone, because I'm not there. You know, it's really, really hard for you to run a business while you are far away.
Yes.
But I am blessed because I have a very good team. My nurses, my doctors, my administrators, everybody is ready to do the work. Even though, I mean, we're basically doing charity. Yes. We are not making money. And they are not getting money. We just give them stipend. You know, they're not really getting what they would really want to get, but they sacrifice, you know, because they really believe in me, they believe in what I'm doing, and they are ready to work with me, and I really, really appreciate them. Also, going to here in the U.S., I have a very awesome team. The church members, they volunteer to do the food packaging and do the food drive. I mean, everybody is just ready to do the work, so I'm really grateful to my team.
Before we wrap, tell us about what keeps you up at night. And what keeps you going?
Okay, thank you. So what keeps me going is for the fact that I just feel good helping humanity. When women give birth, you know, when I see that baby, the smile on their face, when I imagine when they used to travel to Magburka, by the way, that is the name of the town where the government hospital is located,
okay,
which is 3 hours drive from where my hospital is. And you're talking about during rough roads where wow, sometimes impossible for the vehicle to cross. Most of these pregnant women, imagine when you're in labor, even here in the U.S. when they have to give us medication to help us with the pain. Imagine you're going through that pain and you're not able to give birth. Now they tell you they have to send you to another town, which takes you minimum of 3 hours to get there. Sometimes impossible with that pain. Imagine what they go through. Sometimes they die on the road with the baby. So now that I'm able to provide these services in my community, I see people give birth to their babies or when they are not able to give birth, cesarean section, take out the baby. I see the smile on their face, the thank you, the blessing. All of that makes me feel so good. I am so happy and I keep saying to myself, I can do it and I'm going to continue to do it.
And that was Linda Maxensese, CEO of the Community Health Foundation. That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linor Mudu, in Washington, with producer Nicole Peters. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Hi, this is Larry London from VOA 1 and The Hits, and I welcome you to Border Crossings every day at 1500 Universal. And now that we're in August, we have a brand new giveaway for you to participate in. It's the Now That's What I Call Music Volume 87 CD giveaway with David Guetta, SZA, Meghan Trainor, Miley Cyrus Flowers, and even Morgan Wallen last night. All of that and more on Border Crossings, a service of the Voice of America.
This week on Straight Talk Africa, what is the fate of the Wagner Group now that the death of its leader, Yevgeny Prigozhin, appears to have been confirmed? The private military contractor has a strong presence in a number of African countries. Will this continue? For in-depth analysis, join me, Hayley Adams, and my guests on the next Straight Talk Africa, this Wednesday at 8:00.